mainly actually is describing the demoniac nature. Because we've heard chapter 13, we all know what that's about. Chapter 14, the modes. Now we heard about the banyan tree. So what does it do to a person? What does it do to someone if they get caught up in this whole scene here in the material world? What does it do to them? They become demons. Demons are not very nice, as we'll see. Demon means like a dedicated materialist, staunch enthusiast for material life. So in the first three verses, Krishna describes the devotees, or the qualities of the devotees. So many nice qualities of them. And in many ways, they're qualities of the mode of goodness. They're divine qualities, very nice qualities. They'll help one advance in Krishna consciousness. Then in verse 4, Krishna begins to introduce the demoniac qualities. They're very nasty. Pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, ignorance. In verse 5, Krishna gives a little reassurance to Arjuna, don't worry. Maybe Arjuna was getting into anxiety, am I a devotee or a demon? Don't worry, you're a devotee. You have these divine qualities in you. You know, there's a saying that in such a yuga, the demons and devotees, I forget exactly how it goes, it's something like, they were living on different planets. In Treta Yuga, they're living in the same planets, but in different countries. In Dwapara Yuga, they're living in the same countries, but in different houses. But in Kali Yuga, the demon and devotee are living in the same body. The demon and the devotee are living in the same body. So, yeah, that's why we find that sometimes it's a little difficult to really advance nicely in Krishna consciousness, and sometimes we become attracted to Maya. So it's because we have this in us. I'm not saying any of you are demons. You're not, you're great devotees, but there are traces of the demoniac, or when we say materialistic, we mean demoniac nature, anti-Krishna, sense gratification. So Krishna says then in verse 6, now I'm going to tell you all about the demons. And then he gives an extremely vivid description of the demons. Very vivid. They don't like cleanliness. You can't find cleanliness in them. You can't find proper behavior. You can't find truth. They have all sorts of strange understandings about what this material world is. They may think it's unreal, that there's no real foundation to it, that there's no God in control, that reproduction is the essential thing that we should really concern ourselves with. Just like, I mean, you can see it so clearly in Darwin's theory. Darwin's theory simply means the progress of sex life, basically. How to progress through sex life, evolution, one species evolving birth after birth. So it's just following in this principle, thinking sex life to be so important, such an important principle. Then in verse 9, they're so bewildered, it's so crazy, that they actually, they willfully engage in activities which are horrible, and which are actually intended to destroy. Like atomic bombs and things like this. completely crazy, completely mad. They take shelter of lust, verse 10. They're absorbed in pride, false prestige, even if they've got nothing to be proud of. Even if they're full of disqualifications, they'll be proud of something. They're attracted by the impermanent. Verses 11 and 12, as far as they're concerned, sense gratification is the goal of life. That's all. Eat, drink, and be merry. But what happens? As a result of that, they're in anxiety all the time. Because there's such intense competition. I want sense gratification and you want it. So we compete. One of us gets the sense gratification, the other doesn't. So much anxiety is there. Anyway, it's going on like this. The mentality of the classic demon is expressed in verses 13 and 15. So much wealth do I have today, I'll gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, it'll increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy and I've killed him. I'll kill my other enemies. I'm the lord of everything. I'm the enjoyer. I'm perfect. I'm powerful and happy. Very nice. This is the mentality of the demon. But what happens? Verse 16 explains. They go to hell. They fall down. Krishna explains in verse 19 that such demoniac people I perpetually cast into the ocean of material existence. One devotee, when Srila Prabhupada visited South Africa, one devotee asked Prabhupada, is it that everyone will go back to Godhead sooner or later? What do you think Prabhupada answered? No. Prabhupada said no. You can stay here forever if you want. Whatever you want. If you want to stay, stay. Krishna will say fine. If you want to go back to Godhead, Krishna will say fine, come. Whatever you want. Prabhupada said that if you tell Krishna, I want to go to hell, maybe you wouldn't necessarily say exactly like that, but through your desires you showed that you were desiring hellish things. So indirectly you're saying, I want to go to hell. Then Krishna will say, okay, come on, let's go. And away you go. There you'll be in hell. And if you want to go back to Godhead, Krishna says, okay, let's go back to Godhead. So whatever you want. So if you're like a committed demon, as is being described here, you can stay here indefinitely until you decide that now I want to get out. So now I'll surrender until that time. Then Krishna will give you all help. Krishna is very kind in that way. So it's not that, you know, after so many umpteen zillion years, that Krishna is going to finally decide that all you guys who have, well, all the people who haven't gone back to Godhead are still committed to being demons, that he'll just rip them out of the material world and just send them back to Godhead anyway. No. That's another thing. Let's just, what should we do? Finish this chapter? Yeah, let's just quickly finish this chapter. So, what to be careful of, particularly, there are three things. Verse 21. Krishna says there are three things you have to be particularly careful of. Lust, anger, greed. You have to be particularly careful of those things. And how do you do that. You have to follow Shastra. In verse 23, Krishna makes the point that if you don't follow scripture, then you can't achieve anything worthwhile. You won't achieve perfection. You won't even achieve happiness. What to speak of the supreme destination? Then verse 24, the last verse in the chapter, you have to understand what to do. How? Through scripture. And then you can systematically act in such a way that you're elevated. So that's good. We finished chapters 15 and 16. For tomorrow, read chapter 17 and begin reading chapter 18. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. Begin reading chapter 18. We may go a little way into chapter 18. Any last question or comment?
Here we talk about lust, anger, and greed. Yes. But we also said the spiritual greed is a gateway.
Yes. Well, this is talking about material greed. Don't get confused. Okay. Now, for your test, you've got to learn what's on this piece of paper. If you haven't got one, I have a couple more here. Make sure you get one. You have to learn about the banyan tree. You have to learn about the Purusha and Prakriti and all that. Then you have to learn your four verses. Then I also want you to learn from the second half of chapter 9 and the first half or third of chapter 10, how Krishna helps those. How Krishna relates with his devotees. That would particularly mean, as described in chapter 9, verse 22, verse 30 and 31, and then the Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verses 8, 9, 10, and 11. How Krishna relates with his devotees. Or in other words, how bhakti yoga is really such a nice process, and it's even better than Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and those other yogas. Okay, so we'll meet again tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki means that you accept the condition. If you accept a condition, that means you become conditioned. So you accept the condition of goodness, it means you become conditioned by goodness. So we're accepting the conditions of the different modes. So we're called conditioned. Then verses 6, 7, and 8 describe how each one of the modes conditions us with its conditions. So what are the conditions of the mode of goodness? It's purer, it's illuminating. And what happens when you come under the influence of that condition or you accept that condition? You achieve a sense of happiness and knowledge. Very nice. But it's not that nice. Sounds quite good. Very happy, knowledgeable. But look out. Look out. We become bound by goodness even. So our acharyas give a very interesting description of how one becomes conditioned by goodness or what is wrong with the mode of goodness. There are some things which are very wrong with the mode of goodness. One is that it's material. That's, of course, the main one. It's not natural for us. But Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur says that there are two sins in goodness. Two sins. And what are those two sins? They're the very qualities that are referred to in this verse. Happiness and knowledge. In goodness. He says they are the two sins of the mode of goodness. And he says that attachment to knowledge creates ignorance. Now, Baladeva Vijayabhushan gives a more elaborate description. Part of it is, actually Prabhupada in the second paragraph of the purport of verse 6, is basically explaining part of it. So he says that a person in the mode of goodness is aware that he's above passion and ignorance. He's naturally aware because he's in knowledge. So what happens? He becomes proud. He becomes proud of his position above passion and ignorance. Then a very interesting thing happens. He's appreciating that this knowledge and happiness that I have in goodness is very nice, and I don't want to lose them. So what does he do? He works in order to maintain them. He makes efforts to maintain his happiness. He makes efforts to maintain his knowledge. So what does that mean? He's falling into passion because he's making an effort. He's working. He's making an effort to keep these things. So he's actually falling into the mode of passion, because passion means you work in order to achieve a goal. So he says that the attachment, the happiness and knowledge, that's one thing. But the attachment that the person has, that is of the nature of Rajaguna. Isn't that interesting? It's one thing to have the happiness and to have the knowledge, but when you become attached to it, that attachment is of the nature of the mode of passion. So therefore, if he doesn't become attached to the spiritual platform, he falls down. So these are the two sins of the mode of goodness: happiness and knowledge. Then, verse 7 is a fairly clear description. Mode of passion is born of desire, unlimited desires and longings. And because of it, one becomes bound to material fruit of activity. So the conditioning of goodness comes from the knowledge and happiness. The conditioning of passion comes from hankering and attachment. He's attached to two things: the fruit of the work and the work itself. Then verse 8 is describing the mode of ignorance. It covers everything. Mode of darkness covers everything. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the first characteristic of the mode of ignorance is a lack of enthusiasm. Then verse 9. When one is conditioned by goodness, one becomes conditioned to happiness. One feels too satisfied to bother with Krishna consciousness. Why do I need to bother with Krishna consciousness? Life's great. I'm happy, I've got lots of knowledge. Very nice. When a person's in passion, one feels one is too busy to take an interest in Krishna consciousness. And when you're in ignorance, you're too dull or too crazy to take an interest. Then section C is recognizing superiority or supremacy of a mode within a person, or, in other words, to recognize what modes a person is under, or to recognize what modes you're under. It's probably a more practical sort of application. So verse 10 states that the modes compete. Of course, it's not exactly that the modes compete, but what is happening is that your karma is changing. Your karma is being administered basically via the modes. So your karma is changing. So at one point in time, because of your karma, you're more under the influence of goodness, but then your karma changes, or not exactly your karma changes, but you come onto like another part of your karma starts to manifest. and it's of a different nature, so then another mode will influence you. So in this way, one's position in the modes tends to change. Although one will have like a main mode that one is influenced by. So, what is the manifestation of goodness? Knowledge. So in other words, if a person is very knowledgeable, that indicates that they are considerably influenced by goodness. Now, if a person is mainly influenced by passion, how will you recognize that? Verse 12 explains. Great attachment, always interested in fruit of activity, intense endeavors, and great desires and hankerings. And if a person is predominantly influenced by ignorance, how will you recognize that? Darkness, inertia, madness. Hope none of you are mad. And illusion. Hope none of us are mad. So these are the four main characteristics of ignorance. Now later on in chapters 17 and 18, there are further elaborations. Like, for example, if a person is in the mode of goodness, what sort of food will they be mainly interested in eating? And so on and so forth. So many different subject matters according to the modes. But this is just a little introduction. So, person in goodness, characteristic is primarily knowledge. Passion, it's primarily great attachment, fruit of activity, intense endeavor, and great desire and hankering. And the basic characteristics shown by a person in ignorance, darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion. Then verses 14 to 18 are describing actions and death for persons in the different modes. So verses 14 to 15 are describing death. If a person dies in the mode of goodness, that person will go to the higher planets. If a person dies in verse 15, if one dies in passion, then you'll take birth basically on the earthly planets, amongst those engaged in fruitive activities. It means basically in this realm. And when one dies in ignorance, you take birth in the animal kingdom or hell. Animal kingdom means hell. Or some other type of hellish situation. Then actions. In the mode of goodness. Piety. With correct vision. And it leads to life in heaven. Where's that stated? That's stated in 18. Action in the mode of passion results in misery. Action in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness. Then going on to, that's 16. Then going on to 17. What develops from each mode? From the mode of goodness, what develops is real knowledge. From the mode of passion, what develops is greed. From the mode of ignorance, what develops is foolishness, madness, and illusion. Then 18 again talks about destination. Destination of one in the mode of goodness, heavenly planets. Mode of passion, earthly planets. Mode of ignorance, hell. So if you look at it mode by mode, in the mode of goodness, you can make a note of these things, because we're going to ask you about this in the test. In the mode of goodness, at the time of death, the person goes to heaven. The nature of the activities of a person in the mode of goodness, the nature is that they're very pure and pious. And what develops from the mode of goodness is real knowledge. So three headings, death, the nature of the actions, and what develops as a result. So in goodness, death, you go to heaven. The nature of the actions are pure and pious. And what develops from the mode of goodness? Real knowledge. Then again, the mode of passion, under three headings, death, you take birth on the earthly planets. The nature of the activities, they cause misery. And what develops? Greed. Then, mode of ignorance, time of death, animal birth or hellish birth. The nature of the activities of the person in ignorance, foolishness. And what develops from the mode of ignorance? Foolishness, madness, and illusion. Did you all get that? Okay. So now we can go on and transcend the modes. Verse 19 to verse 27. This is what we need to know, really, ultimately, how to transcend the modes. So 19 and 20, describing the importance of understanding all this and knowing that we and Krishna are transcendental. So there's no other performer, Krishna says, than the modes. So if we understand all this and we know Krishna, then what do we achieve? Madbhava, my nature, spiritual nature, Krishna says. You become free from birth, death, old age, and disease, and you enjoy amrita, vimuktam ritam ashnute. You enjoy spiritual nectar. Then in verse 21, Krishna asks three very relevant questions. How can you recognize a person who's transcendental? What are his symptoms? How does he act? How does he behave? And how does he achieve the transcendental position? It's one thing knowing about it, but how do you get there? So verses 22 to 25 describe the symptoms and the behavior. So symptoms. He doesn't hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they're present, or long for them when they disappear. Unwavering and undisturbed through all the reactions of the material qualities, neutral, transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active. Now, according to Prabhupada's purport, those are the symptoms, and everything from that point on refers more to the behavior. Basically, the symptoms go down about halfway through that translation. The last symptom is knowing that the modes alone are active. I mean, they actually sort of overlap to some extent, but in Prabhupada's purport in the second paragraph, he sort of makes this distinction between the first half of the verse, or the first half of the translation and the second half. So second half is more describing the behavior. Self-situated, looking on a lump of earth, a stone and a piece of gold with an equal eye, and so on and so forth. These are the activities or the behavior of a transcendental person. And verse 26 is answering the question, how does the person achieve that transcendental position? How? Engaging in full devotional service. This is a very famous verse indeed. Mam chiyo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate Sagunan Samatityaitan Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. Now this Brahman that Krishna is referring to here is not the same Brahman that Krishna was referring to in verse, whatever it was, 2 or 3 or so. 3. It's not the same Brahman. Just that the term Brahman...